Good morning. This is Word Made Flesh, the radio ministry of Neighbors of Hope. We'll share struggles and triumphs and how through the Word, everyone can experience the loving and healing reality of Christ's compassion. Now here's Neighbors of Hope's Executive Director, Pastor Stephen Palmer, with this week's Word.
Well, good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. I'm Pastor Stephen Palmer, Executive Director of Neighbors of Hope. And for this edition of Word Made Flesh, we're blessed to have a conversation with the women of our Women and Children's Center in DeConcil. Good morning, ladies. How are we doing?
Good morning, Pastor Steve.
They're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, huh? So before we went on the air, I shared with you a story that comes from 1 Kings. It's in chapter 3. It's a story of Solomon. And so at this time, I want to read this story as a little pericope for our reflection, right? So in chapter 3 of 1 Kings, beginning at verse 16, later, two women who were prostitutes came to the king and stood before him. The one woman said, "Please, my lord, this woman and I live in the same house, and I gave birth while she was in the house. Then on the third day after I gave birth, this woman also gave birth. We were there together. There was no one else with us in the house. Only the two of us were in the house. Then this woman's son died in the night because she lay on him. She got up in the middle of the night and took my son from beside me while your servant slept. She laid him at her breast and laid her dead son at my breast. When I rose in the morning to nurse my son, I saw that he was dead. But when I looked at him closely in the morning, clearly this was not my son that I had born." But the other woman said, No. The living son is mine, and the dead son is yours." The first said, "No, the dead son is yours, and the living son is mine." So they argued before the king. Then the king said, "The one says, 'This is my son that is alive, and your son is dead,' while the other one says, 'Not so, your son is dead, and my son is the living one.' So the king said, 'Bring me a sword.' And they brought the king a sword. The king said, 'Divide the living boy in two, then give half to the one and the other half to the other.' But the woman whose son was alive said to the king, because compassion for her son burned within her, 'Please, my lord, give her the living boy. Certainly do not kill him.' The other said, 'It shall be neither mine nor yours. Divide it.' Then the king responded, 'Give the first woman the living boy. Do not kill him. She is the mother.'" Okay, how many of you have heard that story before?
No. I just know of it.
Yeah, it's, I don't want to say it's popular, but it's an interesting story. So what's some of your thoughts, comments, questions? What jumps out at you? What bothers you about that? What inspires you about the story?
I first wonder why Solomon thought it was a good idea to chop the boy in half right from the beginning. Like, why not try to decide who was lying and who wasn't lying? Why was his first decision to chop the boy in half?
I think he was trying to be funny to get out the ladies. Like, you know how you, like, the police use that scare tactic to get you to tell the truth? And I think that, that's the only thing he came up with to trick the other mom to tell her the truth.
You have to have zero empathy to switch a dead child with a living child.
And you bring up an interesting word that, zero empathy, because it does say in there that she's moved with compassion. Right? So the mother, the true mother of the living child is moved with compassion. And her compassion is so much so that I'd rather see my child alive and in somebody else's house. Right? So those of you that are mothers, I mean, right? If you just, we love our kids at such a level, right? We'll do whatever it takes for their best interest. And if it means keeping him alive, it means you have to live with somebody else who, at this point, you probably really despise. At least my child's alive.
Kind of like CPS and adoption.
Yeah.
I instantly went to that. Like, some moms make the choice to give up their children so that they can have a better life.
Sure.
And it's sort of the same way, you know. I don't think that it's like life or death, you know, and nowadays, but I think that, like, they would rather see their kid have a chance at life than to try to. It's a selfless act. I mean, it seems selfish because, like, I don't want the baby that I created. I don't want the responsibility. But, like, if you don't have it in you, like, why not let a person that is trying or willing to take care of it take care of it? Mm-hmm. I would feel like that if I, God forbid, I didn't want my children or I couldn't have them. Like, I would much rather see them happy and in a good place than to kill them or to,
yeah,
to be off with them.
Well, yeah, and I appreciate that, and that's not a bad analogy there. And I think to kind of bring it back, you know, so why would Solomon, first instinct, bring out the sword, right? Well, we've all witnessed people, and sometimes it's even our children, right, where they're just going back and forth, and you can't really. Okay, that comes to the point, it's like, all right, we need to stop the mayhem. Mm-hmm. And a sword has, in those days, would have had the tendency to do that, right? And I think more importantly for Solomon, because they would say this is one of the first steps that they see in him, a good, wise, judging king. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, if neither one of the, if these women are just going to argue, and neither one of them, or both of them are absent of empathy, right, then neither one of them deserves the child. There's no sense going on with the argument. And that's why one of the key words in that little pericope, right, that section of scripture we read, is that word compassion. And that's precisely what I think, I would hope, Solomon was hoping that someone, right, knowing the depths of a mother's love, right, would speak what the truth is.
The scare tactic, it did work.
It did. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, to some degree, we've all had our own little scare tactics, you know, placed upon us. But any other thoughts?
It was like a test, like who's going to tell the truth, who's the one who's going to lie, who's lying and who's telling the truth. So she was like, and who's the mom? So one of, it's like a test, like who's going to, who's the real mother and who's not.
Yeah, and if we're going to think about compassion, I mean, okay, I'm going to be, as a reader of the story, right, you know, part of my heart goes out for the woman who, could you imagine waking up and going, oh, I rolled over and now my child is dead. So part of my heart wants to go out, right, to that. That's got to be horrible. And we don't want to become too judgmental on the, in this state of panic, right? Particularly those of you that have children, you know, the loss of a child. Would you get that desperate to kind of swap it out for another?
Now, you know what? Females actually do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I was watching this show, and it happened, actually, it was, like, for real. I see why, when females, we have our babies, they put the little gold metal thingies around their ankles.
They do now, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, this lady literally pregnant, this lady was 8 months pregnant, 8-9 months pregnant, and this lady lied to her and said, oh, I got baby clothes for your kid, why don't you come over to my house and pick them up? She do, next thing you know, she's dead with a baby, actually literally cut out her stomach.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
That stuff hurts my feelings, like, why would you do that? You took a life to brag about a baby that don't belong to you. Now you gotta spend the rest of your life in prison. Oh, now they give a female a death row now. Automatically, you do that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dang, because actually I read about that. I'm not that desperate. Maybe God's telling me, am I supposed to have kids? Why not adopt?
Yeah. Yeah, there are alternatives. Definitely.
I think that you're right, though, the panic. I know that I've done some really stupid things in panic mode. I'm not saying that I would go that far either, like, mm-hmm. as far as, like, swapping a baby, but I've never been put in that position. Like, right. How do I know that I wouldn't do that? If there was somebody else with the same size baby and I thought maybe I could get away with it, like, we have the human will, which will make you do crazy things.
So let's take this one step further, all right? In those times, all right, sons were preferred, all right? They're prostitutes, which means they don't have a husband, right? And they're trying to make ends meet, so to speak, not to justify their behaviors or their mode of employment or anything like that. But understandably, having that son was crucial to their future, all right? Some sort of status, some sort of lineage, all those things. They're already living in a culture of shame, all right? And as we all know, I mean, that particular line of work can be accompanied by all kinds of emotional baggage and scars and, you know, violence and everything else. Therefore, to compound just the loss of a child, to some degree, is the loss of my future. Right? And again, not to justify the act. Right? But I think if we're gonna try to be like the first mother that showed compassion, then somehow we have to show compassion towards both. It's nice that the story ends the way that we would see justice has been properly served. That's good. That is always a good thing. Compassion is that balance between mercy and justice, right? I mean, mercy without justice is nothing but folly. And justice without mercy is what we call tyranny.
Right? But where's the mercy for the other one? For the other woman.
Well, I think the mercy is that it doesn't say that she was hauled off to jail or anything. You know, she wasn't really punished. She just doesn't get to keep the child. And when we think about mercy, mercy isn't just so what you said in the Old Testament, when we talk about mercy, sometimes the most merciful things we can do is say no. All right? You know, I have a grandson who'll be 7 years old this week, right? And I remember last summer I was teaching him how to ride his bike, two wheels, right? He says, God, I have two goals for you this summer. I'm going to teach you how to swim, and I'm going to teach you how to ride. I'm taking those training wheels off that bike, right? And we accomplished those things. But you're not riding that bike in the street, right? Why? Because, you know, as a grandparent, it's like, like to see you, right? I don't want to come to the hospital and visit you or the funeral home or anything
That's
like that.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, right? But, you know, when you're 6 years old last summer, you're just like, yeah, but I got the sidewalk down. The driveway's not really that long anymore. There's a lot of room out in the street, right? And it's like, no. Yeah, you don't really understand, right? I mean, so to some degree, I'm trying to be merciful. Right? I'm trying to guide him by saying no.
My parents should learn that.
Well, you have to let them know they need to visit our website, and on the podcast they can listen to this episode. So, all right. Okay. Any other thoughts, ladies? Anything else jump out at you? Well, thank you very much for joining us on this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. Till we meet again, may God's grace, peace, love, and joy be with you always.
Thank you for listening to Word Made Flesh. Neighbors of Hope brings people hope through a comprehensive suite of Christ-centered programs that include our men's ministry and women and children's ministry, our social enterprises, Blessings and More Resale Store, Woven Hope and Recycling Center, Fishes and Loaves Food Pantry, and this radio ministry program, Word Made Flesh. Find out how you can become a Neighbor of Hope at neighborsofhope.com. We hope you'll join us again next Sunday morning for Word Made Flesh.